Broadcasting nationwide and coast to coast, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American.
From the Liberty University Broadcast Studio, it's Todd Starnes.
All right, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. This is hour two of the Friday edition. Hope you guys are doing great wherever you might be today. All right, let's get right to this. 844-747-8868 is our toll-free number. ToddStarnes.com, our live show blog, up and running, links to a lot of the stories we're talking about. By the way, in that last segment, the last hour of the show, we played the 911 call from this mom who was caught up in one of these rampaging street mobs. And the 911 operator said, well, sorry, ma'am, but you're on your own. The police have been told to stand down. So we have that audio on the website, ToddStarnes.com. And I would encourage you to check out that audio for yourself. It's just unbelievable. Well, look, the big issue of the day, the big issue of the presidential election is going to be law and order. And the question at hand, will the police be allowed to do their jobs? Well, I want to go to the Liberty University newsmaker line. Honored to have with us Daryl Forte. He is the sheriff in Jackson County, Missouri. Sheriff, good to have you with us today.
Good afternoon and thank you.
So, you know, when you hear stories about people calling 911, and there have been three or four instances over the past couple of weeks, so they're caught up in these protests, and they're told by the dispatchers, yes, sorry, but the police have been told not to intervene. I mean, as a law enforcement officer, what's going through your mind when you hear these stories about law-abiding citizens that are calling out for help, but help doesn't come?
You know, it's disheartening and it just hurts because that's not what we stand for. And we can't let lawlessness take over. So, again, I'll listen to the tape. I heard you a little while ago, but I'll listen to the tape. I have no reason to refute that. But we're law enforcement. When someone comes, people expect us. When someone calls, they expect us to come. So, again, it hasn't happened in Kansas City. I was police chief there for 5.5 years, retired of 31 years, and we've never had a situation where we couldn't respond to a call. Well, I'll definitely listen to it.
Sheriff, it sounds like around the country, and especially in some of the larger cities that are controlled by Democrats, that police officers are basically being hung out to dry. In many cases, New York City police, for example, you hear the officers saying they don't believe that elected leaders have their back. I'm wondering, are you hearing similar concerns from your officers, and what do you tell them when they're out there in the field?
You know, I've heard that throughout my career, and I've been in this for almost 35 years now. I was one of the ones that said that before. I think we need better communication inside the law enforcement organization with our elected officials, and sometimes that's true. Sometimes elected officials don't have your back for a number of reasons.
What are some of those reasons?
I think they want to get elected, reelected. They want to be popular sometimes. But again, from my experience in the greater Kansas City area, most of our elected officials that I've dealt with, even now, some have my back. Some have my back even now. And that means I can have other people's back, if that makes sense. I get support from our local community. I get support from our local community and have for years. Most elected officials, I'm not saying all, but most elected officials support and understand what we're trying to get accomplished.
When you look at what happened in this country in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, I think by and large, everyone in the country agrees that what happened was a criminal act. And I believe that justice is going to be eventually served in that case. But yet, Sheriff, there have been a lot of people trying to convince the public at large that is the norm when it comes to law enforcement in America. What are you doing as a sheriff to combat that mentality?
You know, I think being out there up front, I was out in the protests as a police chief in 2014, 2015. We have to do a better job communicating what's going on. And when you have cameras out there and thank God for that, or they'd be on the bodies of the law enforcement officers or from the community, when it happens, it's a big deal to some people, including me. I'm a black male, born and raised in the Midwest. We know what happened, and one time is too many. So I understand the frustration, but I don't understand the destruction of property and those sorts of things. And just like you just said, I think most people understand. I haven't heard not a single person say what happened to George Floyd was acceptable. But I think what happens after that and the message that we send, and what I've done over the years as a police officer, build relationships so people will listen when something happens. You can't go build relationships after something happens and tell people to sit down and let's meet and talk to me and trust me then. We have to do a lot of work on the front end, and that's telling the truth about law enforcement. We're not perfect, but we're not devils either. You know, we're not, everybody shouldn't be indicted for the actions of a few every week. We do some things wrong. We have to admit it. But law enforcement is a great profession. It's a great profession. And we try to do the right thing, but sometimes a few shed negative light on us.
And I think what, you know, by and large, people need to understand here, when we're talking about Black Lives Matter, this movement, we're talking, I mean, by and large, the people that are burning things down and causing mayhem are white people. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, it's, all you have to do is look at the video here. So I think people need to understand we're dealing with some anarchists here who want to cause unrest and they want to disrupt law and order here in America. And that's not a race issue. I think they're using that as cover. What do you say about that, Sheriff?
You know, I'll just tell you what happened yesterday in Jackson County at our courthouse. We had two white males arrested for defacing the Andrew Jackson statue. You hit the nail on the head. It's not just race. It's some people trying to take advantage of the unfortunate circumstances right now. It's definitely some people, and I can't tell you how many because I don't have any stats or anything, but it always happens. When we have something, there's always people that come in that use this as an opportunity to do some things that they shouldn't do, criminal activity. So, again, we have to do a better job pre-incident building relationships with people.
And at the same time, and again, this is, I read the story, Fox 4 did an interview with you, and you pointed out that you were raised in Kansas City, and racial profiling is a real thing. How do you fix that? How do you fix that as a law enforcement officer?
I think training, and that's not the only solution, I think. And what we do is block training in law enforcement my entire career from 1985 in the academy. They provide training for you. You say you have to do this, this, and that, and you check it off, and then you don't go back to it. We don't do anything to reinforce that training unless it's firearms. We've done, I think, a pretty good job on that. But for some of the other things, the bias-based training, we do it to check it off, and that's just the truth. We do it to check it off, and I think we have to – I'm not saying hire – when you talk about diversity, it's not just gender and race. You need people from everywhere. You need some people with GEDs, some PhDs, just a mixture of people, I think. So some of the people that hadn't been exposed to other cultures, they need to be exposed to those cultures. I think we need to change the way we advertise for law enforcement. I did that as chief of Kansas City. We didn't put all the aggressive things on our pamphlets. We put people out there engaging with the community and being at social gatherings. That's what we want people to understand, community policing, where you go out there and you interact with people. Most of us do an exceptional job every day. It's just a few rogues that are allowed to stay in and remain in law enforcement, even after they're identified sometimes. Because some of these people, after they act out, we look back at their records. They came from another organization because they were able to resign without being terminated and those kind of things. They just get passed around, or they had 15 complaints that nobody did anything about. And I think as leaders, it's our fault. We can't blame anybody. I mean, law enforcement leaders, we have to do a better job of weeding out people when we find out that they shouldn't fit in the law enforcement profession.
I hear you, Sheriff, but I got to be honest with you. I mean, let's just say you've got, you know, I don't know. Let's say you have a group of white people in a specific neighborhood and there's a lot of crime in that neighborhood. It seems to me that if, you know, the police officers were stopping whites in this neighborhood, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I mean, if that's who's causing the crime in that particular neighborhood, I at least in my estimation, I wouldn't see that as profiling. But maybe I'm in the minority here.
F is based on criminal activity and not
exactly, but just randomly. Yeah, well, that's a problem if you're just randomly stopping people because of their skin color.
And again, and I'm not trying to, you know, I've been programmed as a police officer for almost 35 years. Most police officers do the right thing. most do the right thing, but most is not good enough. You know, we need all to do the right thing on a regular basis.
And at the same time, Sheriff, you know, there's two parts to this equation here. At the same time, the citizens of America need to respect police officers, and that's something that is learned at home. And when the officer tells you to do something, you do it. And if you have a problem, there's a process for that. But in the immediacy of the moment, you do what the officer tells you to do.
Absolutely. That's something that's taught at an early age. And the same thing goes for racism. That nobody's born a racist. Nobody's born a racist. That's some things that are taught.
Good point. On the issue of profiling, though, Sheriff, you know, I live in a certain part of a town here in Memphis, and man, they love to set up those speed traps. I think I'm getting profiled.
Make a complaint and do it the proper way.
There you go. There you go. All right, Sheriff. Hey, we appreciate the good word. Best of luck to you. Be safe out there on the streets.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Sheriff Daryl Forte, he's the law in Jackson County, Missouri. Yes, indeedy. My foot's a little heavy. I gotta be honest with you. So the Cadillac has some get up and go. All right, we gotta take a break here. 844-747-8868. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
Folks, welcome back to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Let's get to the phones. Seattle, Washington. Jordan is on the line. Hi, Jordan. I understand you're pretty close to this autonomous zone, as they call it.
Yes, sir. Hey, Todd, how you doing? I'm about 15 minutes from the epicenter.
Is that right? So what's happening? I mean, yes, yeah. So Jordan, what's happening? What's happening there? Have you been able to get close to the autonomous zone?
I've chosen not to. I know some people that went down there just for the fun of it and said it was a pretty dangerous place. It wasn't safe to be. It looks peaceful from the outside, but once you get on the inside and get close, it's not a place you'd want to take your wife and children, if you know what I mean.
Well, no doubt about that. I am curious, though, Jordan, because we've heard that a lot of businesses have filed lawsuits. Some have even said they're moving away. People are really upset that the mayor and the elected leaders there are not doing anything.
Yes, sir. No, that's right. It's really surprising because, you know, Seattle's a liberal city and their mayor obviously is that same way as well. But a lot of people have called for her resignation. And, you know, it got really bad over the weekend. There were several shootings there. There was a teenager that was shot in critical condition. And so the police chief finally said, look, we have to do something about this. So I know this morning you can go on YouTube and there's live footage from helicopters. The Seattle DOT brought some trucks in to remove these barricades that are there to start clearing things out.
Well, you know, that needs to happen. And, you know, there's been a lot of back and forth, a lot of people passing the buck. And I think the mayor and the governor know they've got to do something, but they don't want to be the bad guys. So they're counting on President Trump stepping in and deciding, you know what, we're going to send to the feds. So they're going to be able to turn around and blame all of this on Trump.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I just really wish we could put politics aside and just think about the residents, because these are real people. You know, these are married couples. These are young people that are moving here to work for some of these tech companies. There's young families here. There's the small businesses, like you talked about, that have been there for decades, just serving their local communities, and they don't want to do anything about it. And it's election year. I get it. They want to try to shift the blame and get reelected in office. But, you know, Governor Inslee is just, you know, I pray for the man. We pray for him as a church. But he's just been very silent on a lot of these issues and just not said much. And that's why you've seen some of the county sheriffs in the state just calling for him to step up and be a leader that we need him to be right now. We elected him to be the governor of the state. We expect him to do that.
You can't have lawlessness, and that's the bottom line. You just can't. And the irony is, a lot of these people, when they are attacked, when they're robbed, this one guy who got shot said that he's suing the police because they didn't show up to help him out. Well, what do you expect? It's an autonomous zone.
That's exactly right. You know, well, they changed it. Well, my wife made a good point about this. They changed it to CHOP, I think, which stands for like occupied. I'm not sure what the P stands for, but what it shows is that if it's occupied and not autonomous, then you're not dependent anymore. So now they're demanding that the city help them. But of course, that comes from the hardworking tax dollars that people, you know, have to pay around here to support this group, which is just very, it's very unfortunate that's going on, you know. And, you know, as a church, we've been praying that this could all get settled and people can get moved out and businesses can open back up safely and that we could just get back to normal down in Seattle. Seattle is a beautiful city and there's just a lot of opportunity here. But when you have a crowd like this coming in and taking over, it really hurts a lot of people. And I don't think they realize how many lives have really been affected by their actions.
No doubt about it. Well, Jordan, hey, look, we appreciate you calling in and keeping us updated on what's happening out there. We'd love for you to give us a call back sometime.
Yes, sir. Hey, Todd, I wanted to tell you, I told Avery this. I'm an alumnus of West Coast Baptist College. I'm a youth pastor up here at Seattle Baptist Church. And I was at your town hall meeting when you had the Star and Country show at Fox News. I was in that audience that day. And I really appreciated that that Q&A you did with those pastors down there. That was an encouragement to me. And I know a lot of our pastors support you, and we love you and pray for you. And so thank you for what you guys do. And I listen to your show regularly, so I'd love to give you a call back sometime.
Well, we would love for you to do that, Jordan. And we're trying to grow our audience out there on the West Coast. And so, look, that was I remember that event. That was an amazing town hall and just some wonderful men of God as we're trying to figure out, you know, how do we restore sanity back to our nation. So, Jordan, thank you for that. And what an encouragement. So we appreciate you you calling in. All right. West Coast Baptist College. By the way, now we have three schools that we actively promote on this show, Liberty University and Truett McConnell University. And then out on the West Coast, West Coast Baptist College. Great folks out there. I didn't want to say this while the pastor, you know, he's a youth pastor, so you want to be polite. But actually, we do know what CHOP stands for, C-H-O-P. That is the Capitol Hill Odorous Pansies. That's the what that C-H-O-P, Capitol Hill Odorous Pansies. We're not making this up. I mean, they don't have much height. You know, they don't have any showers. I mean, what is 2 weeks old? They haven't been bathing. And I remember when I had to cover the Occupy Wall Street movement, you could smell those people four blocks before you saw them. You didn't want to be downwind from those people. It was a very terrible thing. Hey, by the way, interesting story up on thehill.com. Good friend of this show, Ed Rollins. I'm a huge Ed Rollins fan. And this guy, longtime political operative, he's heading up one of the top groups supporting President Trump's reelection. So he is a Trumper. And he says the president's got to get it together. He says the campaign is off the rails, and there's a piece in thehill.com. We're going to try to get Ed Rollins on the show next week, by the way. But Ed Rollins says the campaign needs help. The message is non-existent, and he says the constant rambling about Pelosi and Clinton, it's old, it's tired. He's focusing on the past, got to look to the future. This is Ed Rollins, folks. We need to pay attention to these folks, all right? Again, it's the campaign. Got to get it together. Hey, Chet Hopper from The Real Resistance coming up with some Southern Common Sense next. Maine. I've got to tell. I forgot to tell this. Tell this story.
What's that?
Something happened the other day, and you know what? Let's bring in Chet Hopper from The Real Resistance. Chet is our resident. I guess I don't want to say token Southerner. That sounds inappropriate. Are we allowed to call you a token, Chet?
I'm okay with token.
He's our resident Southerner, so you're the expert on all things Southern. So Chet Hopper from The Real Resistance. This is the great weekend show on the Mighty 990 KWAM, and you can listen to their show on mighty990.com. Chet Hopper, great to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Todd. So always a pleasure.
I want you to weigh in on this, too. And call screener Avery. We'll even let you weigh in as well here. So, you know, I've got this. I've got a brand new car. It's one of these Cadillacs, so it's American-made. And it's a highfalutin. And, of course, back in New York City, I would just ride the subway. So for 15 years, I just didn't drive. So I would take the subway. So there's a bit of a learning curve with all the new bells and whistles in this car. I mean, you could actually launch, I don't know, the you know, whatever one of those Star Trek movie things are, the Enterprise or the Death Star, whatever. I don't know. Avery's already
and
riled
you crossed
up.
The line. All right.
But anyway, I'm driving down the I pull into the parking lot the other day, and before the I turn the ignition off, there's a little notice that pops up on the computer screen on the dashboard, and it said, you know, there was some sort of an upgrade. So I hit okay, go inside and forget about it. So later in the evening, I'm leaving the show and I'm driving down the road heading to the park to do my afternoon exercise. And all of a sudden, I hear this voice in the car asking me a question. And I about wrecked the car. And apparently that was some sort of an upgrade now that my car now talks to me.
That's slightly unsettling.
What did it want to know?
That's the thing. It's if I wanted someone to talk back to me in the car, I would just get married and get a wife. But Chet Hopper, I don't know what I'm supposed to do now.
Well, it all depends. You know, if your car is talking to you and it says, you know, a collision alert, that might be a good thing. But yeah, if your car talks to you and says, "What are you wearing, big boy?" you might want to pull over.
Yeah,
you check might to see if something else is going on entirely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did it ask you if you wanted to play a game? Because you say
no, it did not ask me if I wanted to play a game. I'm saying all this for really, I needed a good lead-in for this story on FoxNews.com. Somebody went to go test drive a Lamborghini, and you guys kind of know where this story is going.
Oh, man. Those are fast cars.
So the guy ends up buying the Lamborghini, which is $300,000.
Wow.
Jeez-a-loo. And the guy pulls out of the dealership. It breaks down. The car broke down.
I hope it was still under warranty.
Well, this is where it gets interesting. So I guess the guy couldn't, you know, those British folks, they drive like, you know, they're crazy over there, even on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, I know.
And the guy wasn't able to get off the roadway. And so the Lamborghini got rear-ended by a van.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's no more Lamborghini. And those are handmade, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a pretty sight. So $300,000 Lamborghini wrecked 20 minutes after leaving the dealership.
I would just have to sit there and cry.
There you go.
Hope the insurance
right,
is
well,
paid up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There you go. All right. Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Great to have you with us. No, this is not like the auto club. We're going to talk politics now. Chet Hopper from The Real Resistance. Chet, now you are in, you're a 911 guy, a 911 dispatcher.
That is correct. I've worked for 911 now for 17 years.
Wow. Do you watch they have the 911 shows now.
Well, you know what? It's hilarious. It's almost like doctors watching shows like ER or Grey's Anatomy. Like, you can't really sit there and enjoy it because you spend the whole time going, "That's not what we do. No one does that." So, no, I can't bear to watch it.
They're always the victims of crimes themselves, the 911 on the TV
show. Right, on the show, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for us, it's funny. We have our own, there's been a lot of research about it. As a first responder, we have our own brand of PTSD that we go through because we hear the beginning of every emergency situation, but we never know how they end. So there's no closure. Like, you just hear the most horrifying story ever, and then you never know how it ends day after day after day. And for some reason on those shows, whoever takes the phone call ends up knowing their best friend, sister's brother's cousin after, you know, they grow up together afterwards after they're saved. And I mean, it's just stuff that you would never encounter in actual work.
I saw the one. They've got two now. The original, the 911 was in Los Angeles, and the new one is in Austin, Texas.
In Texas, yeah.
And they decided to make that one, like, politically and culturally woke.
Yes.
So the straight white guy is actually a metrosexual who's always worried about his appearance. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't know either. And then Rob Lowe is the one that's on that show that's like their boss or their captain. And it's funny, I can't stop watching it because it looks to me like he's had like a baby stroke or something, because now he talks out of the side of his mouth.
I think he's had some work done.
And I'm always just wondering if they're going to just, you know, intubate him while he's trying to say a word because his mouth's all twisted.
They have, I mean, it's a, it, honest to goodness, it's like the United Nations of race and gender cards. You got the Muslim, you've got the transgender black dude, you've got the gay white dude, then you've got like the Hispanic guy, and then you've got the fire chief happens to be Rob Lowe's character, who is the metrosexual straight white guy who's worried about his hair and whether or not his hair's falling out.
I just hope that there's not a surge of pans. I don't know what I heard everybody talking about pansexuals the other day, and I have no idea what that is, but that's got to be dangerous.
Just
in a fire station.
Just watch out for the cast iron skillet. That's all I'm going to say. So, Chet, I want to play some audio for you. Being from a 911 operator, we earlier in the show we were talking about this poor lady who got caught up in one of these street mobs in Virginia, and here's what happened when she called 911.
Curtisburg 911, where's your emergency?
Hi, I'm in downtown. The
protesters are blocking. Which street?
Right at Caroline.
Or do you see any businesses? Okay.
Yeah, and they're they're gesturing and they're blocking.
The city has sanctioned their protest, so we just have officers that can only monitor it. They can't do anything about it, but we recommend that
they're blocking. Get out.
Yeah, they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to do that per city hall, so we suggest that you report this to city hall and make a complaint there, and that way they can do something about it, because right now they told our officers that we can't do anything about it.
How do I get out of here? I can't go backwards.
Yeah, I can't. Unless you're hurt or something or get in an accident, our officers can't intervene and move.
I can't sit here all night, ma'am. You cannot do. I have a little girl in the car. You can't do that.
You just have to slowly get through the protest. I can't.
Okay, am I going to get arrested when I keep going? Because they're gesturing at my car.
As long
car,
as you don't hit any
really
people, you're not allowed to hit people.
Well, I will.
Obviously.
I absolutely will, and I need to get out of here.
Okay, ma'am, you cannot hit people.
They're on my car. Right? They're on my car right now.
But we would suggest you slowly drive through the area. Don't hit anyone with your vehicle.
I can't. I cannot get out of here. Okay?
You have to be patient, but I'll let the officers know, okay?
Are you serious?
You guys cannot. We can't do anything, ma'am. The city told us that this is a sanctioned event.
That they're blocking part people getting through to get out.
Yes, ma'am. The city's allowed that. We can't do anything about that. The police can't.
Unbelievable.
So we're all very frustrated about
that. Get out of my car. This is going to get dangerous. I got a kid here.
Yes, ma'am. It was just that you call up City Hall to let them know about your frustrations, because we're all very frustrated.
Get out of the way. This is getting scary. I cannot. There's
or if you can do a side road or something, but yeah, there's nothing else you can do to get them out.
Get out of here, okay? Get out of the way. This is insane. Oh, they're on my car. They're on my car.
What kind of car are you in, ma'am?
Get out.
So, Chet Hopper, this it goes wow. on and on. I mean, what is your reaction when you hear this poor lady who's just driving through town and boom, all of a sudden the mob descends?
Luckily, we haven't had any type of calls like that here in Memphis. And I've always just wondered what would be, the cost versus reward of that situation. I mean, if you're in a vehicle and you've got your child in that vehicle and you can't move, that's one thing. I don't understand why it's not illegal to block travel. That should be illegal. You should not be able to prevent people from driving up and down the road. If you were to block an ambulance that had a patient in the back trying to go to the hospital and they died, you should be liable for that. So, one, I just don't think any city should allow its permitted protesters to be blocking traffic. That one I don't understand in general. And I have to side with the young lady on this one. If I have my child in the car and you're physically on my car and threatening and doing whatever, it's just going to look like heavyweight bowling league down that one, because I'm not sitting there. You're not getting me out of the car. You're certainly not going to come in my car with my child there. We'll just have to settle up with the insurance company and the cops later. I just don't see that being an option to sit there and hope no one hurts you.
Yeah, and that is the concern. And Chet, this happened in Memphis, Tennessee, where you had a couple of guys get arrested. They were charged because they were caught up in these protests and drove through the protest. And again, for me, the issue is, who has a right to be on the road? if you want to protest, go get your permit, go protest. But you don't have the right to impede traffic.
Exactly. I mean, we've pulled 100 permits to have protests down by City Hall. Well, we were always in front of City Hall or on certain areas, Poplar and Highland, an area where we've had protests before, not in the road. I honestly think that everybody's so far removed from having any type of personal responsibility. Everyone has forgotten that when you play stupid games, every now and then you're going to win a stupid prize. And if you don't want to get hit, get out of the road.
It's a fair point you bring up here. And I think the issue is about law and order. And, you know, these people are allowed to get out there. They cause all sorts of mayhem. They loot. They pillage. They plunder. And, Chet, the reason why, in my estimation, is because they've been allowed to get away with it. There's no punishment. There's no consequence for their actions.
Right. These are all those everybody gets a trophy kids that we let slide. This is one that mom and daddy never told them no because they wanted to be their friend instead of trying to be their parent. And so now when someone tells them no, they're like, oh, it can't mean me. No one tells me no. I got a 75th place trophy at home to prove it.
That's,
right?
Well said, sir. Well said. You know, years ago, this was about 2008, 2009, someone sent me a copy of a training manual from the U.S. military, and this was a class that every single officer had to go through, Chet Hopper, and it was about white privilege, and it was about the basic, and they sent me the entire manual, and it was page after page after page, not about how to kill the enemy, not about how to save the country, but about how white people were responsible for all of the problems in America, and white people were responsible for all of the problems in your life if you happen to be a minority. And, Chet, I was doing the math. This was about a little over 10 years ago. So you're looking at guys and gals going through the military. Every single officer in the military went through this. What are they, 18, 19, 20 years old?
Yeah, about that.
These people are now 28, 29, 30 years old. These are the people that are out there marching in the streets. These are the people that are making all the rules now in HR departments in just about every country in America, in every company in America.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me. I don't understand why for people with a melanin deficit, their history for hundreds and hundreds of hundreds of years is now dictating the present for everyone else. Like, I wasn't around when the Mongolians ruled half the world. I wasn't around when Rome ruled even more than that. And I still don't think to this day, because Genghis Khan set a squirrel on fire and threw him at somebody, that my life's bad. Like, you, at some point, the past is the past. If you're seven generations removed from an incident that happened, you almost kind of have to quit whining about that, don't you?
You know, it's interesting. Someone sent us a note on our Facebook page wondering if the Egyptians were going to have to take down the pyramids.
That's what I said this morning. It was great. I was on the Morning Wake Up Memphis with Robin Walensky, and we were talking about this, and I said, I'm pretty sure the people that built the pyramids and the people back in that built the Great Wall of China did not have an advocacy group or a union that they could go to and complain about work conditions.
It's a fair point.
Almost positive that the Great Wall of China, the pyramids, any large-scale topic like that or large-scale building was built on the backs of slaves or people who just had to do what the emperor or the king said. So, I mean, like, now nothing is safe. I mean, you're going to tear down the Great Wall of China? You're going to tear down the pyramids? Right now, because it's just a statue, I'm sure there's a Shoney's big boy somewhere right now shaking in his boots, wondering if he's next.
It's a fair point. Chet, we've got about 20 seconds here. What's coming up Saturday on the Big Talk Show?
Saturdays, we are going to jump in. Sherry and I are going to be talking about the city mask ordinance. We're going to be talking about law and order for sure. We're definitely going to be chiming in on what here in Memphis the city council has to say, and hopefully just keeping it all connected here locally.
All right, Chet Hopper, chetandsherry.com is the website. That's a Chet with two T's, Sherry, i.e., chetandsherry.com. Chet, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Todd. Always a pleasure.
Folks, got to take a break. We'll be right back.
It's the Todd Starnes Radio Show.
Let's get right back to the phones, 844-747-8868, Habersham County, Georgia. Tom is listening to us on the great WRWH, great radio station. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just listened to two preborn messages during the break, so this sort of is in alignment with that. I'm sitting here on a website called abortionclock.org or something like that. And since the Roe v. Wade, we've had, well, by the end of the year, it'll be like 63 million abortions, close to about 9 million of those by Planned Parenthood. So if Black Lives Matter, which what happened to George Floyd, we all universally condemn that. So this isn't about my lack of concern about that. This is about what Black Lives Matter is really about. We know their leaders were trained Marxists, which for those in the millennial and younger times, those were vicious, murderous tyrants responsible for over 100 million deaths worldwide from Stalin and Mao and all those people. So if Black Lives Matter were so concerned about Black lives, they should be protesting outside abortion clinics, because at those abortion clinics, we have more than double the amount of Black unborn babies being killed and aborted compared to white babies or non-Black babies. Now, we are being told to get on our knees for 8 minutes and 47 seconds or whatever that length of time was that the police officer's knee was on George Floyd's neck, by which he died and has been charged. And we all look forward to that righteous result. But if we've got this many abortions going on, 63 million, it takes 15 to 20 minutes, Todd. I've just checked this all out today. 15 to 20 minutes for a surgical abortion. So,
well, there you go.
I would say, on your knees for 15 minutes. Thank you, Todd. And that would be one-fifth of the population on our knees asking for repentance.
Tom, it's a great thought, and we got to leave it there. We're going to have to take a break here. By the way, Tom is absolutely right. Black Lives Matter, they are admitted, trained Marxist. We have that story on the live show blog, so go to toddstearns.com right now, and you can read it for yourself. I mean, this is the real deal here, folks. All right, stick around. We'll be right back.